like I need another moment after that. That was amazing. I'm just going to set my phone up here with a little timer on it because, you know, my kids tell me I tend to go on and on if I'm given the opportunity. So yeah, it is so great to be here in person, following that and following the musical piece. I hope to do it all justice. This sort of feels like home whenever I get to come here, and I'm going to do my best this span of time, as I've said before, to try to get here more often when I'm not speaking, because it does just feel like a very comfortable place. So I just want to start just talking a little bit about the piece from the poem from Khalil Gibran that Rod read, because it sort of has become something I go back to very frequently, and I tend to annoy some of the wonky political people on text chains that I'm on with the advocacy work that I'm doing, because I interject some of these thoughts every once in a while, and it just drives them a little batty because they're more about metrics and, you know, numbers and things like that. But it really, to me, informs a lot of how I approach kind of what I want to talk about today, the reason and passion, because I do think they're two very important ideas that I think coexist in all of us. You know, I think the place in my life, at least personally, where I lose that balance is as I have been raising our three kids. Sometimes you lose the reason a little bit when they do things that confound you and then have to stop and reflect on that when you maybe did something or said something the not exactly correct way. But I do believe that balance of passion and reason is so critical, at least in my life, and maybe folks can kind of carry that with them. But to the topic at hand, I love this topic. I think it's wide open. And I thought I had a really strong sense of exactly how I wanted to talk about this today until I watched Kent's talk from last week. And I said, oh, there's some really interesting things going on there that I think kind of play in. And then we had the pre-talk at the 9 o'clock hour, and then some other things popped in that I said, oh, we got to talk about that too. So it's good that I just have little notes here and there because I'll probably ignore them for most of the time. But it's about born for these times, acting in the world. And I think that the tagline that Leslie included is, what is being done right and how can we fix what is wrong, collective action, individual action, etc. And so what we talked about in there, and I posed a couple of questions, you know, what is advocacy or what are advocates? What is activism or who are activists? Is there a difference and does it really matter? And I did get a few definitions. I'll read these. Advocate from Merriam-Webster is one who supports or promotes the interest of a cause or a group, whereby an activist is a person who uses or supports strong actions, such as public protests, in support of or opposition to one side of a controversial issue. Although it doesn't have to be controversial, it can even be a common sense issue that people in the political sphere have tried to pretend are controversial, you know, such as abortion rights, which, what, 3/4 of the people now support. And so I guess, I think that's just a question. I don't know the answer. We came up with some ideas. I think these definitions play around the edges of what we had talked about in the pre-talk of what those two pieces are. You know, maybe activism being more sort of out there, vocal. I use the term not afraid to break some eggs in doing the work that you're doing, whereas advocates, perhaps in a very personal way, might be advocating for self or others, parents when they're elderly, advocating for kids, but then also advocating for issues in a maybe more quiet way and in a more internal way rather than so much out there. And so I wanted to just briefly get to Kent's first point last week about the soul. He said, the soul chooses the time in which it is to be born. And when I first thought of this, I thought, wait a minute, like I don't believe in all this stuff about you're born into being something and then that you just have to kind of you eventually get to that fate. And I don't buy that. I feel like we're more of a blank slate and we kind of choose where we go. But it really struck me when I thought about going into a little bit of my own personal journey as an advocate or an activist. I said, and Rod relayed this, I said in my email, I came to this late. You know, I was 45 years old when I first kind of jumped into this role as an activist or an advocate. I think I went to one protest in my life back in 2002 against the Iraq War, and two political rallies in my life, one for Bill Clinton in Kalamazoo in 1992 and one for Obama. And that was the extent. You know, I don't think I ever gave a political donation. You know, I voted every time, but that was the extent of it. Something happened in 2016 that I think brought a lot of us into this space. And so I think I interpret what Kent was talking about, and I think he even alluded to this a bit, our soul being born or choosing the time in which it is to be born, perhaps it is that moment in which we say, this is the time, you know, born for these times. Maybe you weren't born in those, you know, for the times, but you were born as an advocate or an activist at the moment, you know, that that happens. For me, it did surround healthcare, which I've been a physician. I graduated medical school in 1998. I've been around doing this kind of work a long time. My wife's also a family physician. I'm an emergency physician. We talk all the time about our frustrations with the system and how we tend to work as advocates for our patients. Oh, I covered up my clock here. For our patients, when we can't get a test covered or can't get a drug covered or when they come in because they've not been taking their insulin, as I had one of the sickest people I've ever seen last week come in with a blood sugar of 1,200. Those of you who have diabetes know what that is, right? And their pH was so low that we couldn't believe they were still alive, and they just hadn't been taking their insulin because they couldn't get it. And so we've done, and so many healthcare people have done advocacy in that way on a person-by-person basis. And then, you know, when they started to try to take away more healthcare with the last, with the prior election to the most recent one, it sort of kind of got me and others into action. So as far as my own little personal advocacy story and journey, started at the bedside. You know, we had President Trump elected in 2016, and our congressman, as a lot of you know, was wanting to repeal the Affordable Care Act. I've been a physician in this district, in this area, and something triggered in February of 2017, and I jumped into it. I'm not suggesting everybody jumps into this world in such a big way. I tend to have done that in my life. When I decided I wanted to start running, I all of a sudden was doing Ironmans and marathons in like 4 or 5 years, and my wife's like, you know, couldn't you just do 5Ks and get in? It's like, well, all or none, you know? So, you know, the congressional run really, as so many of you were a part of that and supported that, ended up being a path for me into this wider world of advocacy for healthcare in general. From that campaign, started a group called Committee to Protect Medicare at the time. It had existed since 2017, just as a Facebook group and a bunch of people with an email list and trying to get information out there. And when the campaign ended, they approached me and said, listen, you've spent a lot of time talking about these issues that we think people need to hear about. We think healthcare professionals are good messengers on these issues. What if we try to build the organization around that and get other people who have been sitting in the exam room, banging their head against a wall, on the phone with insurance companies, trying to get things done, to talk about those stories and to advocate in a wider world? And so that began. I mean, in the early days, and we talk about this now, we just had a retreat, about early actions we tried taking. You know, we were trying to kind of get on the map and trying to get our voice out there and raise money and then be able to advocate for various issues. It's hard to get into that space. It's hard to find people who want to support you monetarily so that then you can hire people, then you can get the word out. And I remember, had a press conference in Houston, Texas. Our idea during the Democratic primaries is when they have a primary where they have events in various areas, we'll go there, and maybe the press will want to come and listen to doctors talk about healthcare. And we had a press conference outside, and ended up being a near monsoon. We had this big backdrop that ended up blowing. It was like a sail. The storm passed. We went back out and did it anyways in the humidity of late summer Houston with a bunch of doctors in white coats dripping sweat. The lens of the ABC TV, one person who showed up was fogged up, and they couldn't get it. And you know, we got one story in a little paper somewhere. And then, you know, the big moment, and kind of for me, where I personally and then our organization professionally emerged onto the scene of healthcare advocacy, was when our then Vice President Mike Pence wandered into a diner in Des Moines, Iowa, and I happened to be there, and we started to have a conversation about a recent policy from the Trump administration. It's where they were offering waivers for Medicaid so states could get block grants. And what that means is right now, people are on Medicaid based on their qualifications. And when they come onto Medicaid, the state or the Medicaid system pays for their expenses on certain levels. And then they get reimbursed at a certain rate by the federal government. And the new, or this waiver plan was to say, well, we're just going to give you a chunk of money, and then it'll go up by inflation every year, and then you figure out how to spend the money. Vice President said, well, that's innovation. And I said, well, if costs go up faster than inflation, if we have a public health crisis and an economic crisis, which we are in and have had recently, more people need health care that can't afford it, that equals cuts. That equals cuts. And as we're talking about advocate and activists, you know, from that moment, actually, the CMS administrator under Trump, who was Mike Pence's administrator of Medicaid in the state of Indiana when he was governor, did an op-ed and actually referred to, shortly after the initiative's release, Vice President Pence encountered an activist doctor at an Iowa diner who confidently claimed, you know, dot, dot, dot. And we talked in the pre-talk about how the word activist has been thrown around as a pejorative, you know, when you want to attack judges who would support a woman's right to choose an abortion, they're called, you know, liberal activist judges. You know, they don't ever refer to themselves as activists when they're trying to circumvent the will of the people, but somehow activist has been seen as a negative or thrown around as a negative. From that Mike Pence moment, and again, that was the idea of passion and reason. A lot of the responses I had to that video were the fact that I didn't get up and start screaming at him, despite the fact that I wanted to. I think many of us in this room, if confronted with Vice President Mike Pence at the time, or President Trump at the time, or various other people, our instinct would be to want to scream and yell and tell them how mad we were at what they were doing. And I just didn't. Maybe it's, I don't know, it's maybe it's looking back to the Khalil Gibran poem of passion and reason and balancing those. You know, I certainly was welled up inside and ready to burst. Maybe it's from doing emergency medicine for so long and having people who are drunk and agitated in your face screaming, calling you names, and not being able to call them names back, having to calmly kind of de-escalate and get them back into their rooms. I don't know. I don't know what the reason, but that's how it transpired. And I've talked with fellow emergency physicians after the fact, and they said, oh, we felt that moment. You know, we've been in those positions of people really pissing you off, and you can't respond in kind. You have to just sort of keep your cool, be the adult in the room. And I felt like that's how that moment transpired. And so that then really launched what our organization was doing, what I was doing, going from people having big press conference or attempting to have big press conferences, getting no coverage, to then being able to exist in the world of advocacy and hopefully doing more to advance the cause of affordable health care than just standing around screaming about it and hoping someone noticed. I just have to throw this in because it was just another, it's one of those moments of pride where somebody throws shade at you who is in a position of power and they intend it to be insulting, and in the people that you work with, it's like one of the feathers you put in your cap. But it was Kayleigh McEnany, who was the President Trump's press secretary. And so I was on a CNN once talking about the protest for Black Lives Matter, for racial justice. And at the same time, then-president was having rallies and had the White House big event where no one was wearing masks, and we were calling it a super spreader event. And the host asked me, you know, do you think there's a problem with people out marching for Black Lives Matter and for racial justice when you don't think this is a problem? And my response was, listen, the people out marching for social justice, marching for Black Lives Matter, are marching on behalf of a public health issue that has plagued the Black community for decades, that young Black men have a 1 in 1,000 chance of being shot by police in their lifetime, that the life expectancy of a Black man is 5 years less, 8 years less than a white man. That is a public health crisis in its own right. They're weighing that decision to fight that injustice by potentially taking on slight bit of risk of catching coronavirus and dying from that. Now, I also said they're wearing masks, they're outside, you know, versus the Trump rallies, which were outside, but no one's wearing masks and everyone's gathered together. Well, it was taken out of context, and they said, she said, Kayleigh McEnany, CNN had on a guest, apparently a doctor, Rob Davidson, who said, dot, 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 dot. So, you know, a point of pride, like you're trying to insult me, but man, you're just like getting me more revved up and ready to go here. So, you know, and I'll just speak on behalf of the organization, excuse me, the committee. and pat ourselves on the back, because this is so not all me. We've now become an organization where we've hired, I think we have 6 full-time staff in communications and organizing. We've taken this idea that maybe healthcare professionals' voices are needed in this fight, and maybe we can be a part of getting this. Let me just grab my coffee and have a sip, sorry. Okay, that's better. Maybe we can get our voices out there, but you know, your voice only matters if people hear it. So we've now hired a staff of organizers working, I think now we have actions in 15 different states. And during the election, last year we went from our, sorry. If you want to cut the mic just for a sec. I just got tested for COVID and I've been vaccinated, so it's not that. No, I think I can, yeah, it's just a tickle right there. We went from an organization that the previous year had raised about $100,000 and just done some emails and things to last year during the election being like a $4 million organization that put out, I think we, when we look at national and local media, and we're really proud of the local media, we had 400 individual press hits in the month of October last year leading up to the election in local markets, in 6 different battleground states, and had a total output of about $10 million of earned media, just going on national and local TV and getting the word out. And so, you know, the way we grew into that was by taking this idea, but then putting in a plan. I was fortunate to be linked up with people who had been working on political campaigns and advocacy campaigns who had this idea, this plan of how we actually get that message out there, not just screaming into the void or doing marches and things, which are critically important, marches and doing individual actions, but trying to make it a more coordinated effort. And now pivoting into this year, where we've been involved in 2 different state fights to get expanded healthcare, both in Colorado and Nevada, passed a pretty good public option type plan in Nevada, or helped pass it with another 12 different organizations in a group. And in Colorado, not as much. We had about $2.5 million spent by the insurance industry against it and got a watered-down version that is going to decrease costs and make it more affordable, not as good as it could have been. And now pivoting into places like Oregon, maybe Connecticut, other places where we think state-based public options are possible. But from the work we've been able to do and put out there, we now have organizations with bigger and deeper pockets who have been working on these issues for years saying, wait a minute, where have you guys been? And we said, well, we've been here doing our thing at the bedside all along. We finally are now organizing doctors. I believe we've had 6,800 action takers in the organization, doctors across the country saying, yes, I'll sign a letter. Yes, I'll do an op-ed. Yes, I'll do an interview on TV. And I feel like, you know, we're now at the beginnings of what successful advocacy hopefully can mean. So I don't think all of us are prepared to kind of go down this path just yet. So like, how can we in our community be advocates? I still try to do work within the community. Right now, we are facing opposition to just common sense public health measures in our communities, like kids wearing masks in schools, like vaccines being required to do various activities. My daughter lives in New York City. And we went to visit her and went to a Broadway show. Well, everyone had to be vaccinated and had to be wearing a mask, and so you have a sense of comfort. I don't feel comfortable going to a restaurant in West Michigan right now because I have no idea what the other people are doing. Even though I've been vaccinated, I know the realities of vaccines and public health, and nothing is 100%, and I'd rather not be in that situation. We have kids in schools in some parts, certainly in Ottawa County. If you're K through 6, the masks are required, and for the most part, that's happening. But if you go a county to the north, there's individual school district advocating for it. In our district in Spring Lake, and you guys here in Grand Haven, they have decided every kid has to wear a mask right now while levels are high, and that's great. Some of that's because of advocacy, because people were sending emails to school board members and to superintendents. I know I was calling my superintendent, who I knew from when I was on the board, saying, Dennis, this makes sense. And not my action, but I think collective action of enough voices helped move those along. I will say there are other entities out there in opposition to some of these things we find to be very common sense. And it isn't just grassroots groups. There's an organization called Ottawa Impact. Maybe it's Impact Ottawa, but I believe Ottawa Impact which is a collection of a 501c4, two political action committees, and a legal fund, right out of Zeeland, Michigan, that is out there pressuring school boards, pressuring the Ottawa County Board of Commissioners. If any of you saw that meeting they had about a month ago or so, I went to it, I spoke at it. There were 1,000 people out in the vestibule yelling and screaming when I, myself and a father who had talked about his at-risk son and the concern he would have had for his kid who was not yet old enough to be vaccinated, and people were booing and jeering and yelling in our faces, and we had to be escorted out by Ottawa County Sheriff's deputies. That wasn't just a spontaneous eruption of parents who were concerned. That was organized by Ottawa Impact, right? They are now endorsing candidates and getting candidates for county commission and school boards to sign pledges to their particular set of beliefs, which in some ways are contradictory to me, common sense, and to, I think, a lot of people in this room's view of what is right and what is wrong. I'll give you hope. There is another group that's burned out of this called Ottawa Integrity, and a friend of mine, Kim Nagy, is part of it, and others, again, as a political action committee, trying to just tell people who are running for office in Ottawa County for various levels, we believe in science, we believe in what is right and wrong, and we want to help support you as well. So you can look at those organizations for what's happening. But for all of us in this room, you know, we can go to school board meetings, email school board members, go to county commission meetings, email people live in the city, Grand Haven, Roger Bergman, who's our commissioner, who's the chair of the commission, who's Republican, but who gave a very, very good statement at the beginning of that very contentious meeting in support of the folks in the Ottawa County Health Department and their measures to help mitigate the risk and to protect our kids. So, you know, I think we can do a lot in our individual world. We can look at what we're doing as individuals in life. For me, it was as a physician, healthcare was a thing that I knew and the thing I could speak about the most eloquently and passionately. And so when that moment happened, like Kent said, you're born into the moment, your soul is born. When the moment appears, you're ready to then be a part of a group of people taking action. I care deeply about climate change. I care deeply about many issues out there. I can't speak any more intelligently than anyone else in this room who cares about climate change. I can speak about healthcare in a different way. I can come, I think being a health physician and a healthcare professional brings a certain level of built-in respect, rightly or wrongly. And some people, as you've seen America's Frontline Doctors, maybe some of you have seen that group of people advocating against vaccines and masks and anything else. They can abuse that level of respect they've been given. But for those of us who are trying to just do the right thing, you can take whatever you know in your professional life or your personal life where you have that built-in level of respect and then use it in a wider world of advocacy and activism. You know, so I think what's next, at least for me and our group, is continuing to build an organization to work on policy in the states. We're already building out a very big campaign for next year during election year, supporting senators who have done the right thing, supporting governors who have done the right thing, in opposition to other governors like in Florida, like in Texas. Folks who we believe are on the wrong side of this entire public health piece and trying to get people in office who then we can, you know, I view activism and advocacy on those two sides, right? Be activists and getting the people where you need them to be, and then you have the ability to be the advocate, to be the lobbyist, to talk to people who want to hear what you have to say, to then make the change you want to have. So, yeah, and again, my thoughts that sort of stuck to a script but sort of didn't, that's what I had to say today. I hope that everyone here, I mean, I think if you're in this group of people,